Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. We hear of the lasting legacy of Pope Benedict XVI's message as he concludes a weekend visit to the cities of Venice and Aquileia. And we highlight the work and the vision of Vatican Radio's English for Africa program and meet the new head of program there. Pope Benedict XVI has returned to the Vatican after an action-packed weekend to the northern Italian towns of Venice and Aquileia. On Saturday, the Pope's first stop was Aquileia, east of Venice, where he was welcomed by thousands of believers waving white and yellow flags. Aquileia is the site of an ancient Roman port city, upon which was built a basilica, which was considered the mother church for a broad area that united the Latin world with the Germanic and Slavic populations during the Middle Ages. Tradition holds that St. Mark evangelized the region in what would become, during the period, the second most important diocese after Rome. Then Benedict greeted thousands of faithful packed into Venice's St. Mark's Square and recalled Venice's special vocation over the centuries of being a bridge between the East and the West.
Questa città ha corrisposto nei secoli alla speciale vocazione di essere ponte tra Occidente e Oriente.
During his two-day visit, Pope Benedict prayed before the relics of St. Mark. He addressed the bishops of northeastern Italy and adjoining areas. He presided an open-air mass. The particular beauty of the cities he visited provided for many super photo opportunities, as I mentioned to Vatican Radio's Chris Altieri, who travelled to Aquileia and Venice with the Pope. Most of the secular media have a beautiful photo of Pope Benedict on a gondola. I don't really think that was the highlight of the trip, although it was a salient moment. What would you say stands out?
Well, actually, let me start with that gondola, which was the same gondola, apparently, that John Paul II used when he was here in Venice many, many years ago. So it is perhaps an iconographical congruity that one could construe from that. I wouldn't make too much of it, but I'd agree that it certainly wasn't the highlight of the trip, which was, in its focus, a very, very local, on the one hand. Pope Benedict came to northeastern Italy, first to Aquileia and then to Venice, really to give guidance to the organization of an upcoming regional meeting of churches that trace their roots to the Mother Church of Aquileia. And then in Venice was here to participate in the conclusion of a major review of the diocese of the Patriarch of Venice, Cardinal Angelo Scola.
And so, Chris explained, Pope Benedict was, on the one hand, giving guidance, and on the other, giving encouragement to the local churches as they deal with a whole range of issues that are really quite local in their concreteness.
That said, the issues that the churches of Aquileia, that the Church of Venice, that they're all facing are in many ways the same issues that churches just about everywhere, certainly in the Western world, are dealing with. You're dealing with, at its most basic level, how to bring the gospel into the world today, how to address the pressing social issues that we all have, how to come out and meet multiculturalism, that is the influx, the reality of it. I don't mean the theory. And one of the interesting things about this visit is precisely that these churches aren't a sort of laboratory exercise in multiculturalism as a theory. One of the things I noted right from the get-go here, and one of the things that struck me in terms of the organization of the visit was precisely that. What you're dealing with here is a group of churches that in history have needed to find a way to how can I put this for you?
Be on the crossroads?
I don't like to say be on the crossroads. I guess what I'd like to say, and not that it's not, I mean, the city of Aquileia Hill was a cultural and a commercial crossroads for centuries. So I don't want to deny that. But I think what I'd like to say is that the ability for these peoples to find ways to be respectful of profoundly felt and proudly felt local identity, while at the same time constructing an order that really does effectively serve the common good, to manage the tension between local and universal is a practical necessity.
The northeast of Italy is a particularly industrial, productive area, and it does deal with the everyday reality of the many, many immigrants that come to that area to work. It struck me that the Pope said at a certain point, he said, "Do not be afraid of the stranger."
Well, sure, he did. Precisely so, Linda.
La paura degli altri, degli estranei, dei lontani.
But by the same token, he understands that the people of this region do need to work out for themselves on a practical, on a concrete level, how to welcome the stranger. What Pope Benedict did was remind them that what Christians are called to do is precisely that, to welcome the stranger, not to turn him out. Now, how they go about that is going to be their business, and the Pope was not here to give practical prescriptions of what to do for immigrants, but to remind people that they need to put their best energies into finding the way to be welcoming to them, because that is what we're called to do as Christians. Now, here, the interesting point there, and the thing that, beyond the fact that we are all called to welcome the stranger, in that little microcosm, in that little one focus area, if you will, something else comes into focus, and I think that's one of the broader issues, one of the broader points of the visit, which is that we're called to be as Christians in the world, but not of it, and that is a tension that is perennially present in the life of the church, and finding a way to manage that tension, to channel it, and to turn it into something productive, if you will, useful and good for the church and the broader society. This was one of the central focuses of Pope Benedict's trip to northeastern Italy, and notwithstanding the local character of the particulars of the visit, that is something that I think was a message to the whole church.
Chris, on a more, let's say, personal level, did you get the feeling, watching the Pope, watching how events turned out, did you get the feeling that it was successful, that the Pope himself was happy with how things went?
I certainly did have the impression that he was very pleased, and he was visiting places that he, as a lover of history and of culture, is very much at home in these spaces. The warmth with which he was received was often surprising, actually, and something that perhaps didn't get conveyed as well as it has in other places, not because people didn't do a good job, but because of the physical constraints of the city of Venice and how things have to be shot, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I would definitely call this visit a success. But I would also like to say that the Holy Father gave a whole series of extremely meaty and carefully crafted, very, very thoughtful reflections in his public remarks. Those are going to remain, and they're going to take some time to digest.
Yes, it was successful in the short term, as far as the visit did rekindle enthusiasm, Chris pointed out. But as it rekindles enthusiasm among the faithful generally, it also offered them a chance to renew what Chris calls their sense of self, their sense of history.
In fact, this was sort of the pattern over the past 2 days. The Holy Father would give an address that would praise the glories of the church in Aquileia, for example, and then on to the church in Venice, in rhapsody. But then he would turn around and he would say, "Don't rest on your laurels." You know, he'd say, "Be their equals, be the betters of your forebears. Don't stop now. keep going. So he would recover the sense of history, and then he would challenge them to be equal to their forebears and even better than them going forward. This is important because of what it doesn't say. Let me put it this way. There's the subtext to the very powerful texts and to the whole visit that I think might be described as the recovery of history, and it fits very closely into the teachings of the Second Vatican Council and specifically of Pope Benedict XVI's own understanding of those teachings as being in continuity with what has gone before, not in rupture.
And my thanks there go to Chris Altieri, who travelled to Venice and Aquileia with Pope Benedict XVI. Meanwhile, before Pope Benedict XVI's arrival in Aquileia and Venice this weekend, Chris travelled to the area to await the Pope and to see what was going on behind the scenes as the people there prepared to welcome him. One person Chris had the chance to speak to is Father Gianandrea Di Donna of the Diocese of Padua. Father Di Donna is the master of ceremonies who oversaw the completion of the sanctuary for the papal mass. He told Chris that preparations for the liturgy and for the sanctuary were painstaking and extensive.
We have arranged the liturgy many months ago, and so we have the cooperation of many priests and seminarists for the service.
He also described the significance of the elements the designers incorporated into the Byzantine-style decoration of the great gilt apse they had constructed.
We would like to have like a basilica behind the sky, you see. And so we have the catino absidale with Jesus Christ, daisies, with Mary, Holy Mary, yes. And Saint Mark, the evangelist. Behind the apostles, and behind Christ, the Pope, that is the sign of Christ in the church, and the bishops behind the apostles.
Vatican Radio, World News.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Laudetur Jesus Christus.
Dear brothers and sisters, the new series of catechesis, which we begin today, are devoted to prayer.
Through its 40 language programs and with the contribution of its 200 journalists, Vatican Radio offers news on the Catholic Church. It has a great variety of news and feature programs that focus on the activities of the Pope in the Vatican. They offer in-depth analysis on moral and religious issues in line with the Church's teachings. They provide live reports and musical entertainment. But if you're a listener, you already know that. What you may not know is that our sister program, English for Africa, has a new director. His name is Father Moses Hamungole, and he's from Lusaka in Zambia. Seeing I know the rest of the group rather well, I decided to go and say hello.
You are the new head of our English for Africa program. How does that feel?
Well, it's a big challenge and I'm still trying to find my feet. Having come from a background of being in studying for the last 2 years, so I'm still adjusting from being a student to becoming a worker, full-time worker, as it were.
Were you studying communications at all?
Yes.
Okay. In Rome as well, I understand.
Yes, in Rome as well. So that was in 1990, 1999 to 2002.
And tell me, when you were in Lusaka, which is where you've—I know you've travelled a lot, but I presume you spent a lot of time in Lusaka, which is where you come from. Did you listen to Vatican Radio?
A few times, yes. At the time when I was working in the production studio called, at the time, Yatsani, we had already started thinking of setting up a radio station, beginning with the one for Lusaka Archdiocese, which also took the name as Yatsani Radio. I was working with Father Eustace, and he had been working at Vatican Radio. So in a way, he started getting the programs that were being aired in form of cassettes, which he was keeping for the new radio, so that when the new radio would start, they would be able to have some material to broadcast during the test period. So in an indirect way, I was listening to Vatican Radio at the time.
You had no idea you'd end up here?
No, not even in my wildest dreams.
In Africa, at the service of reconciliation.
You have a great staff downstairs, and I think many of our listeners already know them because Festus and John Baptist went on a trip, and we do liaise a lot. We do communicate with our sisters and brothers downstairs. How many people make up the English for Africa program altogether?
There are four people. There's John and Festus and Godfrey Kampamba.
I am John Baptist Tumusime.
I am Festus Tarawali.
My name is Kanyante Godfrey Kampamba.
And myself. And then we have two colleagues that really are part of our setup, as it were, but they concentrate on the Kiswahili programs. There are two of them. There's Father Richard Mjigwa and Mama Muhera.
Hamjambo, wasikilizaji wetu wa Afrika Mashariki na Kati.
Hii ni Radio Vatikani ikiwatangazia katika lugha ya Kiswahili.
That's what I wanted to ask you, because if you open the webpage, on the right-hand side there's the English for Africa, and on the left-hand side it's in Kiswahili.
Yes. We do have a relationship with the Kiswahili because mainly Kiswahili is spoken in the so-called English part of Africa, I mean in East Africa, and those countries fall under our English for Africa service. So in a way we have this collaboration, and the Department of Kiswahili seems to have come up as a baby of the English Africa service. So
who do you broadcast to?
Well, mainly it's to, so to say, English Africa speaking countries, but also, strange to me, during these few months I've been here, I'm getting reports or broadcast reports from people in Europe. For example, a couple of times, I think two times now, I've seen letters or reports from Finland, one from UK, and another one from Germany. For me, that was really an encouragement to know that there are many other people following our programs.
As a journalist here at Vatican Radio, I found Father Moses' comment on feedback particularly interesting.
I've heard a few comments from people that I've met, like who would tell you, look, we always tune in to English Africa service because of the, one of the program, apart from Church News, of course, which not many mainline media do broadcast. But also they said there's an angle that when we present things, even about what we call panorama, which kind of covers quite a number of countries in Africa, what is happening, they say there's an angle which is not usually covered from the mainline media, or so to say the big media. Usually, for example, somebody was telling me quite recently, what is given in other media is mainly figures of people who have died without the human angle to it, without looking at the suffering that the, whether it's 10 people who have died. Normally in Africa, we talk of extended families. If you talk of 10 people, you can be sure more than 100 people are affected by those 10 lives that have been taken away. So there's that angle that is usually missing in the secular media, so to say.
How many different programs do you have within your own program? Do you do a news program?
Yes, we do a news program, which is called the Church News, first of all, which concentrates mainly of church activities, announcements, the activities of the Pope, and also from the national conferences and regional bishops' conferences. And then we have what is called Panorama, which looks at mainly the things that are not usually broadcast in the Church News, or could be the same issues, but looked from another perspective, maybe with an emphasis maybe from what is being said by the international community or United Nations. And then we have other programs that are more of features. We have Millennium Appointments, which deals with a number of issues, justice and peace. And then we have also a sports program.
A sports program?
Yes,
that's
which mainly looks at the different sports activities in Africa, but also concentrating mainly with football and the main games, so to say. So we try to give a coverage of that. And
I think you must be the only program on Vatican Radio that has a sports program. Am I mistaken?
I tend to think so, but I'll be able to confirm, as I'm not very familiar with the other programs being broadcasted from other angles. And then we have also a feature on the youths. Then there's a program which is called the Echo of the Synod, which is a follow-up on the last synod and even the previous synods that have been held of the church. We have also another feature on the environment.
Right.
Then on Saturday, Sunday, we have some reflections that are given by one of the priests who's recording them on a weekly basis. And then Saturday we have preparation for the liturgy. As much as we take the readings of the Sunday readings, the first and the gospel, plus the reflection, but we try to avoid giving it like it's a mass. We take it as a help for people who are preparing to go the following day for mass.
One thing I've often noticed whilst listening to the English for Africa programs is the use of great music.
When people go out, for example, somebody goes out on holiday, they collect as much as they can. They do some original recordings, even in some cases. And also through friends, they do send the music and then we download it and then we use it.
Now, I say this because you definitely have a very specific flavour. There's a very specific atmosphere to your programme, which is different to the other programmes.
Mm-hmm. We try to use as much as possible the music from the countries that we cover. Of course, because of the languages, sometimes, though, once in a while, we are kind of open. I think we don't want to restrict ourselves to only Swahili or English songs. Sometimes we use also the local languages, as much as I may not be able to understand exactly, but I know when the listeners from that particular country tune in, they are able to understand the message of the song. Or sometimes some of the songs have a universal message. You may not understand exactly what it says, but you know generally, this is Lord have mercy song, and you know what that means.
I also pointed out that perhaps more so than in other continents, Africans listen to the radio a lot.
I think we have quite a number of listeners in Africa, because quite a number of Catholic radio stations rebroadcast or cross over to the Vatican Radio at a specific time once we inform them that our program goes on air from this time to this time. So they kind of tune in to Vatican Radio and air it live at that particular time. And then when it is over, then they go back to their own program.
One thing that I've always felt very privileged is that at Vatican Radio, we're actually encouraged to talk about Africa. And also, since the Synod in particular, we have a special page, we have an interactive map, which is great. Right now, the news is full of Africa.
Yes.
What kind of broadcasting do you do regarding the latest events across Africa?
Generally, say Vatican Radio covers the events from a very different angle. We are looking at the other aspects that we are not more interested in the figures. As you know, we can't say completely that there's no political angle in it. There is, but it's kind of a sober kind of political angle. For example, when we were reporting on Ivory Coast in the last few days, we've always said, look, let us wait until we have a clear confirmation, until we are sure what you are saying is what is happening. Because if you went to the media, you'll find that depending who was reporting or who was giving you, which news agents was giving you the story, they gave you from their angle. If it was a French one, they gave you the good things the French are doing and how they have been provoked and to warrant their participation in the civil war, so to say. If you look at the other side also, that is pro-Bagbo, They are also giving you the stories of why the French should not interfere into the local issues. So it depends on the line of support that the particular media gives to which country and who influences the politics. I think for us as at Vatican Radio, that's the difference that we have. So we use our own discretion, our own judgment to see what angle do we present in this issue. And our side is not mainly to encourage wars. We are not hero-worshipping so much the people who are bombarding, for example, in Libya. Our approach is to see what is it that can bring peace. What is it that can save the people that are being attacked, the innocent people who are being attacked. So I think those are the values that maybe make it a difference and gives value to our coverage of events in Africa, which very few other media houses, if I may use that expression, are doing that.
Finally, I asked Father Moses to tell me whether he has a special vision for the program.
Well, what I would like to say is I don't think I came with any vision, and I have no vision, so to say, of my own. I think I come to an established institution that has a long history. 80 years of existence is not a joke. And two, I come to work with collaborators who already have been working here and have a lot of experience. They are trained people. It's not like you are just walking into a house that is full of people who know nothing. But even then, they may not know something from an academic point of view, but they have the experience of the place. So in a way, my first attitude is one of learning. I want to learn and understand, first of all, how things are working. And I don't think so far I have regretted, because there's a lot that I'm learning about what is happening here at Vatican Radio. And also, I'm also seeing the possibilities where creativity can come. I was talking to one of the collaborators quite recently who was telling me, no, tell us what you want us to do. I told them, no, tell me if you want to collaborate with us, tell me what you think you can do. And from what you suggest, I will tell you, yes, this we can do, this we may not be able to do, or can we modify and do this? That means at the end, we'll come with a totally new product, because the collaborator and myself or the department, we are all working together to create something that is creative, something that is new. So I think I use the expression, I don't want to keep the windows closed, but at the same time, I don't want to open all the windows, because if I open all the windows, there might be cold air coming in. It might affect me. But if I keep all the windows closed again, it might kill the creativity, the opportunity for creativity that may be there. And I might be the first one to suffocate. So I don't want to suffocate. But at the same time, I'm being conscious and trying to learn and to understand what is my role. And I think my role is more of building a new team and trying to see how this team can function together to support each other as we carry out this mission, which is, for me, is a big responsibility. And also build together with this team, let's come up together with the new initiatives and whatever, so that at the end, the vision that may be there is not my vision, but it's the vision of the whole program, working together to see how we can better the content or the programs that we broadcast to Africa and anywhere else that there are listeners that follow us.
Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.
That's all from the English feature program today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we will be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programs on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English program. Laudetur Jesus Christus.